You've tuned in to Naturopathic Earth Radio and Holistic Health News, where you get the latest on medical cover-ups, government malfeasance, toxins being put in our food and home, as well as sound, clean eating principles. We are here to cast a light on what the big sick care industry and its government shills don't want you to know. Don't be a slave to Big Pharma. Break free of the shackles of Big Food and start your journey now on a long, purposeful life. Become a citizen of Naturopathic Earth. Here's your host, Gregory Luna.
Hello, everybody. This is Gregory. And welcome back to another episode of Holistic Health News. I hope you're doing well today as we listen to the dying embers of Nine Inch Nails. Today, we're going to go back to the deep, deep well that is intersexual dynamics. And talk about marriage. Is there a shortage of men worth marrying? This is from Psychology Today from Teresa DiDonato, PhD, which we'll get back to later. New research suggests a mismatch between what men offer and what women want. That is the subtitle here. All right. Marriage rates are on the decline in the U.S. and have been for the last few decades. Today's data offered by the U.S. Census shows that nearly 70% of men and women were married in the 1950s, compared to about 50% in 2018, with a near 10% increase during that time frame of men and women who report never being married. Yeah, I mean, it's cohabitating. People are just moving in together. There are a number of reasons for this demographic shift. For instance, delayed marriage, more long-term non-marital cohabitation, and perhaps less cultural emphasis on marriage. Yeah, well, there's no more religion anymore to tell you to get married. Why aren't women getting married? Okay. New research identifies an interesting quirk in the marriage market that might explain the declining rates of marriage. Taking an economic approach, the authors argue that there's a fundamental mismatch between what available men in the U.S. have to offer and what available women in the United States are willing to accept. Maybe they propose women aren't getting married because the highly desirable men are taken. Focusing their analysis on single heterosexual women, the researchers used data from the American Community Survey to predict the likely characteristics of these women's husbands if they had husbands, and then compare those characteristics to what actually available in these single women's dating pool. More specifically, the researchers generated synthetic spouses, quote unquote, for the single women in their sample by first matching them with a demographically similar woman, same race, education, military status, income, who happened to be married. The synthetic spouses were designed to reflect the characteristics of the husbands of the similar married woman, thus assuming women of similar demographics are looking for similar characteristics in their partners. Whew. This method offers a starting point for documenting the characteristics single women might be looking for in a partner. The researchers then compared the synthetic spouses with the real and available men in the United States, and here's where things got interesting. These available men fell short. All right, that's a lot of blah, blah, blah for what the gist is here. So how bad is it? According to the study, the kind of men that single women likely would marry if they married, i.e. the synthetic spouses, were not only 26% more likely to hold a job and more highly educated, but they also had a nearly 55% higher income than what the available men in the United States actually make. In other words, from an economic standpoint, the dating pool lacks the kind of men that women might particularly be interested in attaching to for the long haul, because women are wired because of their Paleolithic underpinnings for security. That's why they're looking for money, for men who make more money. And now, additional analysis involved matching processes between single women and real available men nationwide, statewide, within a single woman's PUMA, public use micro area data, to see if these women could theoretically find someone who matches the kind of men they would marry. In other words, how easy would it be for these single women to find desirable partners? This exercise extended their findings to include older women have an even smaller dating pool of economically desirable men than younger women. Yeah, that's true, because no one wants a post-war woman. Well-educated women face more of a shortage of economically desirable men than lesser-educated women. Not true. Minority women, particularly black women, have a heightened unlikelihood of finding a partner who is economically desirable. Very true. In general, it's harder to find an economically desirable man in one's own close geographic area than in the broader nationwide comparison. Well, I mean, that makes sense. If you live in small town, wherever, yeah, you're going to have problems finding somebody than if you live in New York City.
Adolescents today still report plans to marry, suggesting the consistent downward trend in marriage rates could reflect undesired singlehood, not necessarily choices to be single in the face of ample desirable situations. Lichter and colleagues research is compelling because it identifies a potential economic issue tied to sociodemographics that may be responsible for changes in marital rates. If the pool of marriageable men fell short of what women want, women might be rather single than settle. Of course, the study offers a pattern of potential explanation, but does not show a clear cause and effect relationship in the modeling. Blah, 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 blah. In a changing landscape where the women are accessing education, delaying marriage more than ever, these findings become particularly intriguing. While mismatches between the preferences of unmarried women and what unmarried men have to offer persist, will the gap widen? Blah, blah, blah. All right, this is just Psychology Today nonsense. Let me tell you the truth here. Here, you got to understand the Paleolithic underwiring of men and women. Now, we do have past episodes of intersexual dynamics. I would scroll back through the last 50, and we have a bunch. Women are wired to look for one thing, security. Okay, so if you go back through most of human history, we have not been in modern times. Modern times is arguably 6,000 years since the advent of civilization with the Indus River Valley Chinese and all and Mesopotamia and so forth. So that's a blip in the bucket of what humans have been. So we've been around mostly in caves and small groups and so forth. So women, being the smaller, weaker sex, crave security. They need protection from the saber-toothed tiger, from other men, and so forth. And so that's best manifest in something that we call hypergamy. Hypergamy is the desire of all women to essentially marry and breed up to the highest man who can provide the security. And hopefully an ancillary benefit is also the man with the best genes. In the Paleolithic time, lots of times it was the same thing. If you think of Khal Drogo from Game of Thrones, right? He was a big dude. So he had great genes to breed with, but also he was the chief of the clan. And because of this, women crave security, financial security, and status. And this is best employed by the use of hypergamy. So women will move their way up to get the highest, what we would call, sexual mark of value man available. Men, we are very simple. We want the most young, beautiful, fertile woman possible. This goes back to our Paleolithic underpinning. The younger she is, the more likely she can breed more children. And if she's beautiful, our offspring will be beautiful. And if she's healthy, our offspring has a better chance of surviving. Okay? So a sexual market value of a woman is largely between in her 20s, because that's her peak fertility. Studies show a woman's peak fertility is going to be in her 20s. And as she gets older, her fertility drops, and therefore her sexual market value drops. So women in their 30s, albeit they are still fertile, remember 95% of a woman's eggs are dead by 35, she's not as desirable as women in the 20s. Just like if you look at the male point of view, right? So a man who makes $70,000 is not going to be as attractive as a man who makes $200,000. So my point is this. Both sexes are shallow. Men want youth and beauty, and women want security, i.e. money, in today's 21st century America. We're both shallow in different ways. Now, dealing with this article. So the problem with women finding men is this. So now that women are in the workforce, men are falling behind. I remember being at the University of Alaska. That's where I went to graduate school. And there was a professor there, Dr. Kleinfeld. And she wrote this book, How Boys Are Falling Behind. And I remember going to these meetings, and it was such an uproar from the feminists, because the feminists, this is not true. The women are falling behind. And even back in the 90s, she was like, no, the patterns are clear. Women are going to be getting more graduate degrees, law degrees, medical degrees, and men are falling behind for different reasons. Variety of reasons. And she's right. If you look at all the things now, women are getting the higher degrees, men are falling behind. So now women are getting these higher degrees, doctors, lawyers, you know, whatever, therapists, whatever, accountants, and they're making more money. Now, the endogenous need for women to be with men who make more money than them, i.e. security, hasn't gone away. It hasn't gone away. Women don't marry, especially if you take away like college sweethearts, high school sweethearts, couples that marry in their 20s. Women in general don't marry men who make less than them. They don't. They marry men who make the same amount or more, because that triggers their hypergamy, and that triggers their satiation for security. So the problem now is that you have women who are making, let's say, $100,000, $120,000 a year, as opposed to in the 1960s, like during Mad Men, where women were teachers and secretaries making, you know, $10,000 a year just for inflation. So at that point, any man essentially who's working is going to be making more than the woman. And so that satiates the woman's security and hypergamy. But now that she's making $120,000, $150,000 a year, that pool of men who make more money than they are drops, because a lot of men, median income in America is like 40,000, but a lot of men, let's say, who are making 50, 60, 70, 100,000, she automatically throws out of the marriage pool just kind of intrinsically. She doesn't even know she's doing it. And so now there's only this pool of higher men. The problem here is that these men have very high sexual market value. The men who make $200,000, $500,000, $1 million a year, these men get the pick of the litter. And they're not going to choose a 38-year-old woman because she makes a lot of money. They're going to choose the 23-year-old young virtuous woman, because that triggers his need to be with beautiful young women. Now, a lot of women who hear this get mad, but they know deep down that their biggest competition is younger women. And if you deny the fact that men and women want to be around beautiful young women, look at TV. TV has beautiful people. You look in the real world, you look in the walk around your neighborhood, it's not full of beautiful people. You watch TV, it's all young, beautiful people. Look at porn. Porn isn't populated by 40-year-old overweight women or men, right? It's all women in, you know, 22, 23. Look at advertisements for perfumes and colognes and all these things. Those are all younger women. So again, this is the wiring. So these older men or these richer men go for the younger women. And so now these women, let's say, who are 38, 40, 45 and make a lot of money, they don't know what to do, because they have standards, so to speak, that they're wired to have. And so that's why they can't find men, because they can't really lower their standards and marry the noble policeman or the garbage collector. They just can't do it. And so now you're going to have a generation of what we call cat women, you know, women who live alone and hopefully they had children from a previous marriage, maybe, but they have 40 years of invisibility, you know, from 40 to 80, and they're just going to live alone with cats. And, you know, hopefully they have friends and stuff. But this is what's going to happen. So this is what Psychology Today is getting somewhat right, but really wrong. Is there a shortage of men worth marrying? Yeah, because women are making more money, and because of that, they can't marry down to men who make less money. And because of this, you're just going to have a lot of women who end up being alone. And for better or for worse, that's the situation. Now, really briefly, a lot of men are opting out of marriage completely, because for two reasons. High sexual market value men, or men that they would call red pill aware. These men are opting out because they see that the system is stacked against them. So if we know that women marry men who make more than them, so let's say the man's making 75% of the total income, women initiate divorce in America, and this is a documented fact. You can look it up. 75% of the time, and if the woman's college educated, 90% of divorces are initiated by the woman, not the man. Men rarely initiate divorce. So what happens is women initiate divorce. There's no fault divorce now in the last 50 years in America. So you don't have to have a reason to divorce. You can just divorce because he doesn't make me happy or whatever it is. And she will get half the assets plus child support plus alimony, and states have alimony. And that alimony payment can be till she dies. So even though the man, let's say, built up a business, let's just theoretically say, and brings in 80%, 90% of the income. Let's say he brings in $600,000 a year, and she's a teacher. She works and gets $50,000 a year. When she initiates the divorce, they have $650,000 of total assets. They'll divide it in half. So she gets $350,000, he gets $350,000, even though she'll get seven times more money than she arguably deserves, plus the child support, which is 20, 25% of his income, plus alimony. So a lot of men are like, this system is stacked against me. Why am I going to marry? And a lot of men are just opting out. They're just going to cohabit or not date at all and go their own way. So you see some men are just free. I mean, it's not. And again, the left and the feminists will say that this is misogynistic. This is the shame tactic they typically use. But it's not that. It's just there's just men who are smart. Like, look, the system is stacked against me. Yes, you say you love me at the beginning, but when I sign that marriage contract, I'm essentially giving you a loaded gun. that you can use on me at any second in the next 15, 20 years when we're no longer in love. Because love is a societal construct. It's not really real. It's just infatuation, hormones, sex, and then codependence later on. But, you know, these men are thinking long term and like, yeah, this relationship might be good later on. But if I sign this contract, she has all the leverage. And women have all the leverage once the man signs the marriage contract. All of it. So that's one reason men aren't marrying, because again, it's just too much of a risk, especially men who make a lot of money. Imagine a doctor who makes $300,000 a year. And let's say he gets a woman pregnant. And in some states, that's 20% of his income. So that's $60,000. That's $60,000 a year she gets just for breeding a child with him. Plus all the other money he would lose if he were to marry her. So it's a humongous financial risk for men. And if you look at the divorce statistics, it's a big risk. And a lot of men are just not opting to take it. The other reason why a lot of men aren't marrying is because the sex positive movement, which has told women the last 20 years to sleep around with men just like men. You know, we're equal to men in every way, shape, or form. So if men are sleeping around, women can sleep around. So now the sex positive movement has told women to sleep around. And now that they're sleeping around so much, most men can get sex in the first, second, third date. There's no incentive for men to marry, because the incentive and for centuries past was that the only way to get sex was through marriage, because the girls were all virgins, right? They had to show the bloody sheets and so forth, or you had to go to the town whore. But no one's going to marry the town whore. So men had a motive to marry, or a motivation to marry, and that was sex. But now that women are putting out so easily because they've bought into the radical feminist sex positive movement, men are like, why do I need to sign the marriage contract? You know, why buy the cow, right? Why do I need to sign the contract? I can get sex on the second date. Over and over and over. So this is the problem. So you see, and this is classic cultural Marxist ploy, right? Pit the sexes against each other. Pit the classes against each other. Pit the races against each other. So now women are hating on men. Men are hating on women. The feminists hate the men. The men going their way are weary of the women. And it's just horrible. So I just wanted to talk about that in a second. So you could see why both sexes aren't marrying. Guys. Website's Naturopathic Earth. I know we don't really have a lot of intersexual articles over there, but if you like holistic health articles, articles about cancer and carcinogens and clean eating, go check out the articles. While you're there, go to the food articles and click on the Amazon links. Anything that you buy on Amazon within 24 hours, it doesn't have to be whatever the link is, but just anything you buy, we get a 2% commission at no expense to you. Also, go and buy Confessions of an Obese Child and Revelations of a Weight Loss Warrior, my two books on Amazon. And if you want some one-on-one coaching, contact me through the Clarity FM links. And we have three podcasts here. Confessions of an Obese Child. We have a new episode coming out May 1st. And then, of course, Holistic Health News. And then Essential Oils and Herbal Apothecary, which we just did one on Arbor Vitae Essential Oil, Neroli Essential Oil, and a tree one, which I am forgetting right now in my old age. All right, guys. Please subscribe to all of them and post an honest review. Until next time, take care. God bless.
Thank you for listening to NPE Radio and Holistic Health News. Visit our website at naturopathicearth.com. Follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Holistic News Now and at our Facebook page at Naturopathic Earth. Please consider a donation at patreon.com/naturopathicearth. Buy the Confessions of an Obese Child ebook on Amazon or Barnes & Noble Nook. Consider subscribing to our podcast. And as always, please post an honest review on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, or wherever you listen to this. And remember, the core belief at NPE, let food be thy medicine, let nature be thy healer. Until next time, music courtesy of Nine Inch Nails.